You've dismissed every accomplishment I've made. You've talked about my father. Well, you call me an entitled millennial. I call you a carny succubus, because the dirty secret about you, the dirty secret is you need this generation more than it needs you. And you've surrounded yourself with impressionable youth. This isn't about my dad. This isn't about the dead. It's about the living. It's about my mother. It's about my sister. It's about my wife. It's about the 14 years it took me to go from undesirable to undeniable. At full gear, I beat you. I become the world champion, and you fall back into your circle, your inner circle, and you let them know the ground should be rumbling between their feet, because the elite are coming. And when the elite and the inner circle square off, it'll be a match beyond, and we are going to eat you alive.
Hey, this is a song for my haters. Yeah, y'all got me feeling like the greatest, yeah. Hey, this is a song for my haters. Hey, hey, y'all got me feeling like the greatest, yeah.
Ha, bitch, I'm about to blow up. Uh-huh. Say what? Bitch, I'm about to blow up. Came up, I warmed up, the next up, bitch, I'm about to blow up. Now don't it sound legendary? Live enough to resurrect the dead and bury.
Welcome to Keep It 2019. A tweet that turned into a joke, that turned into a text, that turned into a wrestling podcast. I'm your host, Nate Milton, and I'm being joined by my co-host on this journey, my partner in crime, if you will, fresh from the podcast witness relocation program. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him. You know that laugh. You know this man. You love him. Some of you love him. Some of you have other things to say, but you can say that for his Twitter feed. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian, entitled millennial man. How you doing this
yes.
week, my brother?
I'm back. It's fun to be back. It's, you know, just you and I catching up before we went on. It's great to be chatting with you. It feels so weird. I'm not here to promote anything or anything like that. Literally, it has been a love of the current pro wrestling scene that has brought me out of hiding. Last you and I spoke, we were literally having to go back to the year 2000 to find something interesting to talk about in wrestling. And now I feel like, we're probably just going to scratch the surface during this conversation.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the last time we talked, and I think other than the Southland Tales episode of the Rocky Maivia Picture Show, before that, and then, of course, the first episode where we talked about Scorpion King, mm-hmm. you got to go all the way back to the King of Sport episode where we talked about Black Panther.
Wow, really?
So you're talking like 2 years.
That is a while. Damn.
Okay. So other than talking about Black Panther and rock movies, you and I really haven't talked on a podcast in a while.
And then I think you probably have to go back to, a WrestleMania preview show from 2016 to even hear us talk about modern wrestling.
Yeah.
Because that transitioned into Review America, which we will not be talking about today. I would say.
I heard you were the whistleblower, brother, so I wanted to get the exclusive interview.
Here's my thing about the whistleblower. One quick thing about the whistleblower. I bet the whistleblower has already talked. If I'm just going to go out on a limb, one of the people who has testified is the whistleblower. They're just not being identified as it.
Yes. Yes.
That's where we're going. It's going to be a "it was me all along, Austin" type thing when we finally figure out who the guy was.
It was me all along, Trump.
It was Vindman. We all know it was him. But yeah, let's talk about wrestling. Here's the thing that's going to sound so weird to a lot of people. I feel every time you and I talk, you're the optimist. I'm the pessimist. This goes back to the TNA days.
Yeah.
even even though I was, oddly, I think the most optimistic I've been so far was when we talked about a company that got shut down 20 years ago. I am so excited about the state of pro wrestling right now.
In terms of a particular individual in AEW, I had the thought this past week, Brian Mann, that I cannot believe I'm even saying this in 2019, but barring any African-American wrestler, because let's not get crazy, we know where my bread is buttered. Is it possible that your boy, Cody Rhodes, might be the best wrestler on the planet? Because even if he's not, he might be my favorite wrestler in the world right now.
Are you saying my fellow Garrison Mill Elementary alumni, Cody Rhodes? I want to say he is doing some absolutely fantastic work right now. These promos that he's been cutting, the way that he's been presented, have been really astonishing. However, one caveat that I am going to throw in here, and this is not to take anything away from Cody. I think what we're seeing here is how really fantastic the AEW presentation and the AEW production staff can be when they get behind someone. Now, that, again, is not to discount Cody, but he really is the first guy we've seen them push at a top level. And I think if you see what Jon Moxley has done on the mic, I think that when we are in a position where, hey, Jon Moxley is the big babyface challenger this month, and he gets that level of presentation, I think it's going to be there as well. I think Kenny Omega, when we get there, because I think Kenny Omega ultimately is our biggest destination. I think the reason they're going with Cody as the first challenger to Jericho is specifically kind of for this reason. He's one that people know. He's a great promo. But I think so many of what they're doing with him and what AEW is just doing in general is they're just doing it right. And, you know, to plug my boy Peter Rosenberg, he just did a great interview with Cody. And one of the things that Cody talked about on there was the real thing is always better. Playing off of a real thing is always better. That simply just mentioning a line about his mom is going to be there for his match, that means so much more than fucking Bobby Lashley fucking Rusev's wife. That makes you care about him so much more. And one of the great things he said in this interview was he said, for the last 20 years, people have been talking about all these wrestling rules that aren't wrestling rules. They're WWE rules. There's little things that WWE doesn't do for like whatever reason Vince doesn't like it. But the simple thing of Cody talking directly to the camera during his promos in the ring, that's great. The fact that they're not fully scripting all of these guys, that's great. The fact that really everything is playing off of the real guys and turning it up. I think none of this is to take away from Cody, but I think we really do need to give AEW their due that this company has been on television for a month and a half. And if you look at what they've been able to do in that short time with guys like Cody, Moxley, you looked at Darby Allin, what they've already done with the Inner Circle. Oh my God, that Inner Circle promo video, that comedic video they did, that is funnier than anything WWE has done in two decades. They've been around for 6 weeks, and that thing was already packed full of running jokes that they've established in that time that got not only huge pops on Twitter, but it was killing in the arena. That's the thing that strikes me.
And it's funny because I think maybe the fans have heaped a bit too much expectation on AEW in the sense that at the end of the day, it's a wrestling company.
Right.
Like, this is not something that's going to change the world. It's not going to change the economy. It's not going to change the way people interact with each other. But I think that, like, there's something to the fact that this is a company that just feels like they're making their own rules, they're blazing their own trail, and when you have somebody like a Cody who is this recognizable figure from his time with the WWE, but he's being presented in a way that folks really haven't seen him. Like, I would say ever since the All-In match with Nick Aldis, Like, mm-hmm. Cody's been a different dude. Like, we saw maybe a little bit of it in Impact, maybe a little bit of it in New Japan. But for the past year, I'd say Cody's been kind of on a different level. And I think you're right in that it's something that the company is just waiting to do with a bunch of people. Because, like you said, Moxley, I think, is going to pop. Omega is going to pop. One of the people who I think is going to pop that hadn't even been on Dynamite proper yet is somebody like a Sonny Kiss. Like, I think Sonny Kiss is going to pop when he finally gets to TV. So you're right. I think just this presentation, this philosophy of the way we do TV is going to set them apart from what the main roster WWE is doing right now.
Well, this is going to sound it's going to sound very basic, but I think it actually is kind of revolutionary. AEW's main goal right now is to entertain their crowds and make new fans. Mm. WWE, on the other hand, because they are so large, they're this global corporation that has all these deals all around the world with various governments and broadcast partners and sponsors and merchandising. Making new fans and entertaining their audience is on the list of priorities, but it probably isn't in the top five, which is why when you look at WWE financials, everything tied to popularity is trending downwards. Ratings are going down. Merchandise sales are going down. Live event attendance is going down. The network number is going down. So much of WWE's business model is based on guaranteed money that they're getting from other corporations. And that brings up a whole host of problems. Now you watch AEW, and that's not their business model. That's not what they're going for. They live and die based on how popular they are, how satisfied their fans are, and how over their talent is. They can't just, you know, slot guys in and out. You know, you're not going to see after this Full Gear match just being like, okay, well, this month we're just going to go ahead and say, you know, for the heck of it, Jimmy Havoc is going to be facing Jericho at the next pay-per-view, and we're going to build that up for 2 months. They'd probably do a good job at it, but they're not just randomly plucking guys up and saying, okay, well, you know, you're the guy. And listen, for WWE, they do that for a whole host of reasons. The ability for them to say, X person is champion, and he's facing this person for the next month and a half at live events and in dark matches, that makes advertising much easier for them. They just... Because they're so large, they just can't be as nimble. They just can't pivot. They probably could restructure their business so they could, but they've decided not to. Whereas you look at AEW, this was crazy to me. I was watching last week's episode, or I guess not this week's, but the previous one. And they were in Charleston, West Virginia, in a venue that has not had a wrestling show in 2 decades. There is no way that the majority of the people in that audience have seen any of these performers live before. Yet Peter Avalon comes out and he gets so much heat because this is a crowd of wrestling fans who like going to a wrestling show, and they understand when the condescending prick comes out, you boo him. And then Jon Moxley came out and beat him up, and they cheered him. And Jon Moxley cut a red-hot babyface promo that they got behind. Because here's what I love about AEW, and I got to be honest, I'm completely in the tank for this thing. I remove a lot of my critical analysis for this company because I show up to it, and I show up to it the way that I used to show up to Nitro as a kid. I want to be entertained for 2 hours, and these people want to entertain me. I don't get as like caught up in the minutia of like, oh, well, my wrestling fan brain tells me this is the right way you're supposed to do it. Going back to that same Cody interview, he was asked about, you know, that people maybe criticize their style, that like, you know, that it's maybe too much, you know, too many high spots, you know, flippy flop and all of this stuff. And he admitted that, you know what, when I first, you know, met the Bucks, I kind of felt that based on everything in my training. But I'd rather the audience be standing up, you know, out of their chairs rather than sitting on their hands.
Yep.
And so to kind of, this will be the last thing to wrap this up. A great example was when they had the finals of their tag title tournament, and that match got some criticism because the Lucha Brothers don't really tag in and out. They just kind of ignore that rule, and people were like, AEW, you need to enforce these rules. Like, why are we just throwing everything out of the window? Who cares? Well, here's the thing. That match was red hot, and the crowd was so incredibly into it, chanting for everyone and were reacting to every major spot. As soon as this episode was over, I then turn over to the USA Network. I watched the end of NXT, where we have Undisputed Era faces Matt Riddle and Keith Lee. And they're doing wrestling the right way. They're doing it the smart way. They're telling the story. And all they're doing is the same thing that every WWE tag match is, where they spend 90% of the time working on one guy to get to a hot tag because that's the only kind of fucking tag match they can tell. And the other company that apparently knows how to do it and they understand philosophy and they're the smart ones and you guys are just doing high spots, their audience was sitting on their hands. So, okay, which one of these actually is the smart thing? Like, to me, wrestling is you're supposed to go to a show and be excited and get involved in the drama. And maybe that style that AEW does is what you're supposed to be doing. It isn't what WWE kind of is doing, where a lot of times these WWE shows feel like a fucking lecture. It's like, hey guys, come to class and we'll tell you how matches are supposed to be. And if you don't understand it, it's your fault. It's not our fault for putting on 17-minute long matches with guys that have no heat. And then we do a non-finish and you guys tune out and you're on your phone the whole time. That's your fault. That's not our fault. We know what we're doing. We're telling stories. And AEW, it's like, hey, I have yet to see a match on AEW with a dead crowd. Mm. And they are featuring a lot of talents that the crowd doesn't know. So how are they able to get people involved in their matches? And AEW, with all the bells and whistles, have crowds across the nation sitting on their hands.
I think it comes back to a point that you made earlier, Brian, and that's the fact that not having kind of the baggage of the WWE machine and the history that the WWE brings with it, it allows them to be nimble. It allows them to pivot. The word I would use is they're able to make course corrections. Right. And that's one of the things, especially when you talk about this company going to TV with so many people who haven't been on TV before. One of the things that's been fascinating for me to watch so far is the way they kind of hear the real-time response from their audience, whether it be in the building or on social media, and then they kind of course correct after that. And one of the biggest examples for that for me is if you go back to views, we got a lot of the comedy in those shows. And ever since those early pay-per-views where that comedy wasn't as well received as some of the other things on the program, we've seen less and less of the comedy. Right. And the comedy that they have used has been used to great effect, you know, like Orange Cassidy and things of that nature.
Well, and they've been very upfront about like, hey guys, we're learning how to do this as well. And I respect that. I think when they first did Double or Nothing, and their pre-shows were being criticized for this a lot, was I think they were looking at it being like, okay, how do we get some of that comedy, some of that comedic energy that people love on Being the Elite? How do we put that into this show? And I think what they've come to realize is, okay, this is not the place for that. In the body of our broadcast, our show, we need to be staying in character all the time. We can't be breaking character for the sake of a irreverent, you know, winky joke. We have Being the Elite. We have that. And I do think that is very important for keeping that audience engaged. But I think they're also very smart in understanding, like, okay, that doesn't have a place here on the show. I think that Jericho promo was the best use of it, the one that was the comedy one, because not only was it very, very funny, but it was these guys being dicks. Like, it was them rubbing your face in, like, they're making fun of Cody. They're not.
It makes sense in the context of Jericho's character.
Exactly. It would make sense that Chris Jericho, the character, would see that great video package from a few weeks ago on Cody and say, oh, well, I'm going to make a parody of that. I'm going to make fun of that because that's how little respect I have for this guy. That's phenomenal. That's brilliant. I really love that. But that's a way to have the humor without. It's humor in service to what your end goal is. You're not working against yourself, which a lot there in the beginning, it kind of felt like they were working against themselves. And I think they're also realizing there's certain things that they probably shouldn't try to do anymore. You know, I think there's a reason why we don't have like a big battle royal on the pre-show coming up for Full Gear.
And it's goes back to what we were talking about earlier where, you know, you're saying the goal of AEW is to entertain the fans and grow the audience. I think by any measure, by any metric, they've succeeded on that first point. The question I would ask Brian, and you know, it's funny that I'm being more of the I wouldn't go as far as to say pessimist, but maybe more the realist. Whereas right. you are playing the Nate Milton role of glass half full here.
Hey, we'll transition into some WWE talk, and then maybe the role in the reverse. We do need to later on, not to cut you off, but like we do need to talk about how NXT factors into all of this. But you were saying.
But in terms of growing the audience, what have you seen so far to make strides towards that point? And maybe what are some things that you're seeing right now that is possibly hindering them from growing the tent of AEW fans?
Well, one thing, and this is going to sound very small or whatever, but like just two specific examples. I think when I look at stuff like when Darby Allin had that spot, the skateboard spot, or the Rick and Morty you know, kind of integration they had, or when Kenny Omega came out in the Undertale outfit. I think the fact that you have these characters, and Rick and Morty one notwithstanding, because that was a paid integration, but it was with characters that it made sense for, but with a very relevant, popular show for the audience they're going for. I think we're seeing that this roster is allowed to be themselves a little bit more. And they're allowed to actually they're allowed to actually present things that they're passionate about. And so we're actually, the points of references that these characters are making feel current and relevant and feel like things that should be shared. You look over on WWE, no one on that show feels like they're being themselves. They're getting paid $5 million a week to make SmackDown by from Fox. And for some reason, AC/DC is their theme song. You're telling me you couldn't have thrown a couple million to Travis Scott or something to get like a kind of a cool, relevant song that might, you know, actually get some like radio play potentially, just, you know, maybe. Yeah, it just, I think that AEW, when it comes to relevancy and popularity, I think they're right there. On top of it, I think the fact that they are presenting exciting matches that people want to tell their friends about, I think that goes a long way too. I do think that the building the audience was hurt a little bit by their premiere. You know, they premiered pretty hot, and then within the first month having to deal with back-to-back episodes going up against the World Series, I don't think helped. But this is, you know, kind of a long view. You know, if we're looking at this week's rating, we saw AEW won, but by 9,000. So it's kind of a neck-and-neck tie, you know, to be honest, between AEW and NXT. But what that tells me is, looking at those numbers, is that there is, at least right now, roughly 2 million people watching wrestling on Wednesday nights. And they're in that group, there's probably 500,000 that are going, that are kind of in play back and forth between the two of them. That makes sense. And if you just look at the pure numbers for AEW, what they're doing in the key demos, the things that that advertisers really care the most about, they're doing phenomenally well, because that's the audience they're programming for. They're programming young. They're specifically not like, they're not loading this thing full of legends. They're going young. They're aiming young. They're thinking about the new generation of wrestling fans, which, again, if we go over to WWE, I was watching NXT, and you saw where like they brought Poppy out and like that whole weird intro, and you just, all of NXT is specifically trying to be the younger, cooler brand. And if that audience is the key audience that advertisers are going after, well, why isn't Raw and SmackDown adapting that same attitude? Why is it the third brand that's the one that's actually going after the group that matters the most? You know, you go back and watch the Attitude Era, the biggest lesson of the Attitude Era was it was so popular because it was relevant, because it was it was tapped into where culture was. It wasn't just sex and violence, because you saw other promotions do that years later and they didn't have the same level of success. It's because you watch those episodes, and we can laugh about Limp Bizkit now, but Limp Bizkit was extremely popular.
We will laugh about Limp Bizkit forever, Brian Mann.
As we should. But that was relevant at the time. Like, Chocolate Starfish was actually a major album. Rolling was a big song on the radio. And you're just not seeing that same level of crossover in WWE right now. You know, as much as I love AEW, I think if WWE got their act together tomorrow, they could crush them in a month.
Yeah.
But they just can't get their act together.
And it's funny when you talk about the ratings, because I've seen so much hand-wringing about the fact that the NXT ratings have been going down. But I think people need to put it in perspective from the standpoint of when people were giving like their initial estimates of what this show would do. Even now with the decreased numbers, they're still above what most people were estimating. And you know, you're talking about, you know, 800,000 every week. That's well above what a rerun of Rizzoli and Isles would get for TNT in that time spot. So I think the network's happy. The advertisers are probably happy. And so, yeah, the numbers have gone down from that initial million, but that's not where your expectations should have been anyway in the first place.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not, again, I'm looking like long lead here sort of a thing, where we'll see where we'll eventually be. I mean, the fact that they had 1.4, 1.5 million people for that premiere. And
that's crazy.
They're now down to around a million. I think that's pretty good for a brand new promotion.
Yeah.
Like one that I'm sure a lot of people, and if we're just like using the numbers, like that there was 400,000 people who tuned in and said, that wasn't necessarily for me. But the fact there's still a million people who are like, yeah, this new, like that's a really good building block. And if we're comparing prime demos that are the most, again, the most coveted viewers out there for advertisers, the fact that AEW is so close to Raw and SmackDown when they've been around for less than 2 months and those shows have been around for 20 years. That's a pretty big indictment. And then if you take it that step further and say, okay, what are Fox and USA paying for those numbers versus what is TNT paying for those numbers?
Yep.
So it's a very successful venture. And I think that when people just kind of look at, this week AEW and NXT kind of did the same. It's like, okay, yeah, like whatever. That's great. I mean, I do think this Wednesday Night War is ultimately going to be a lot better for the industry. And hopefully, I don't know. I mean, I can say hopefully, but I really am not holding my breath for Raw or SmackDown.
Let's talk about the actual show Dynamite a little bit more, Brian, man, because I know you can talk
bad name. I'll say that.
Finally, a little objectivity, sir.
I mean, I get that they want to brand these things, but at first I was like, yeah, just call the show AEW. But I understand because that's so dark, and maybe at some point they'll have another show. I mean, I get it, but like, I don't know.
But you know, you can talk about the wrestling all you want, Brian. You can talk about the comedy and the freshness of everything, and how much you like the promos and all that. But you need to keep it 100, sir,
yes,
with the listeners, because we know the real reason you love Dynamite so much is that it's on TNT and your man Tony Schiavone is back doing his thing.
Honestly, Tony Schiavone, best announcer in the biz right now. He is fantastic. I love
Schiavone
on this show. He has credibility in a way that helps. He is refreshed. Obviously over the last two decades. And I think honestly calling baseball helped as well. He has more of a legitimate sports feel about it. And I forget who I heard say, one of these podcasts, everyone has a podcast, look at us doing a podcast, who they were talking about Tony Schiavone, and they're like, the thing that Tony does that JR doesn't do, which JR, he's there serving his own purpose as well. What Tony does that's so great is he's like, I'm a little older. I don't necessarily get all of this, but I like it. I like what wrestling is now. I like how wrestling has changed. Excalibur's there to sort of teach them, lead them, hold their hand.
Yeah, like Excalibur's the young dude. JR's the lovable grandpa, but Tony's like the cool uncle.
And I think JR's main purpose, his purpose right now is pretty much the same purpose as Jerry Lawler's on Raw, where it's, okay, if you're a new person tuning in, they're here to make it feel familiar. If you tuned into Raw and Jerry Lawler was not there, I can see how someone would be like, wait, who is Vic Joseph and Dio Madden? I've never heard of these people before. So Lawler, I think, is just there for like maybe, you know, 3 to 4 months to make people feel, you know, like comfortable with this new duo. And I kind of hope JR's in the same position. Maybe he'll just be around for 6 months. I don't know. I think it'd be better if he could transition into being their John Madden, someone who's more of a interviewer, someone who's there for analysis, not necessarily doing commentary all of the time. I mean, I like hearing his voice. I can tune him out pretty well. But Tony, like,
yeah, I think JR, before you talk about Tony, I think JR would best be served, like you said, in that kind of interview mode, because the stuff he did with Cody on the countdown before the last show was excellent. You know, the kind of the sit down interviews, but also I'd save JR for like your biggest matches.
Yes.
To give those matches gravitas. You know, I don't want to say the word waste because it sounds negative, but I wouldn't want to use up all my JR capital on a match that really doesn't mean anything long term.
Yeah, and I think Jim Ross is great right now for making kind of just co-signing the product. I think if you're tuning in, just hearing his voice, I think for a lot of older fans, I think a lot of lapsed fans, because that is, I think, one of the big plays that AEW is going after. And again, we saw with that West Virginia show in a very small way. There are millions of people who just stopped watching wrestling.
Yeah.
They are wrestling fans, but they're not a fan of the one version of wrestling that this one company puts on. And because it's a monopoly, they really have no other major option. You know, if you're not someone who's like scouring the internet, who's not, you know, subscribing to New Japan World, if you're just someone who wants to turn on a TV channel and watch a wrestling show, you really only have had one option. So I think that if you're one of those lapsed fans who's coming back on, I think JR being there just kind of lends a level of credibility.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I didn't know what I needed until I got it. And what I needed in 2019 was your man Tony Schiavone, because you're so right. Good. Like, I think having an enthusiastic Tony Schiavone, which is something we rarely got when we were doing the Keep It 2000 show, like, it's night and day. If you listen to that guy and if you listen to the guy calling AEW now, like, it's – you can tell he's invested in the product. He's refreshed, like you said. And it's been a nice, pleasant surprise hearing Tony on these shows.
Yeah, and also just, like, the connection that he has with – the Rhodes family.
Yeah.
Like, and they don't shy away from it. Again, so much of this is, again, AEW versus WWE, is that over in WWE, they don't want any of their broadcasters or referees. That's a different thing. But they certainly don't really want any of their broadcasters to have, like, unique personalities or backstories, it feels like. It's like, oh, Corey's our edgy guy, but that's about it. You know, it's like, whereas with Tony, it's like, yeah, Tony has a backstory. He has a history. You know it. He has a history with his family. We're going to highlight that. We're going to build off of that. We're not going to ignore it. We're not going to assume the audience doesn't know or doesn't care. And if they don't know, we'll remind them. I just think Tony is so fantastic. I think he just brings a great energy. And when he doesn't know something, that also allows Excalibur the opening to sort of educate him, which is great.
Yeah, and Excalibur, we haven't talked a lot about him, but I think – you know, some folks might have seen his commentary in other places, but this is really his kind of first big major national spotlight, and he's done a great job with it. Like, from the first show he did to the very last episode of Dynamite that we saw this past week, like, I think the guy gets better every week. He gets more comfortable every week, and you're right. He does add, like, a hipness factor to Uncle Tony and Grandpa JR.
Now, how do you feel about the mask?
I think if you're just tuning into this show cold, the mask is a bit off-putting at first.
Right.
But now I've seen so many shows with the guy that it doesn't faze me. But I could see how if you're one of those lapsed fans you're talking about who's just coming back, or maybe somebody that heard the hype or heard Marv Albert promo AEW on an NBA game and you want to check it out, that this guy is just like, this is a little weird, but he's so good that I think by the time you get into the show, you forget all about the way that he looks with the mask.
Right, and this also brings me back to something Cody had said a while ago when they were first announcing their broadcast team, and he was saying that, like, he even had an issue with the mask, but he had to kind of, like, grow and evolve on that, and I think that's interesting. I mean, at first, I kind of felt like, that's a little... You know, but now I'm like, one of the things I love about AEW that I've loved about every wrestling show I've liked, and this is honestly WCW at its best and at its worst, Attitude Era, WWE, early WWF, is that it's just this weird carnival of all of these large characters.
Mm.
And depending on the era you're in, you different characters are suited differently for the era they're in. And I turn on and, like, I like that if you're going to have these three white male announcers, one of them has a mask on. That's weird. That's different. You know, like, it throws a bit of a wrench in the works. I like, and he's so good. And I do think that if the time came where they decided they want to ditch the mask, which they might get there eventually. I mean, who knows? Like, maybe this thing starts picking up and they're like, or the guy just could say, hey, it's my gimmick. I want to do this my whole career. But if the time ever came, I think you could get a lot of heat on a heel for unmasking him. Or even just attempting to unmask him. But yeah, no, I don't get as caught up on the mask.
Yeah, I would say looking at the TV presentation, the commentary is something that's been a standout for me. The way that they kind of produce things has been interesting for me, just kind of watching from a TV production standpoint. The one thing that I still think they need to tighten up on, and granted, you know, again, we're talking about 6 episodes of TV that these folks have produced. There's something to the way the matches are structured that I think works if you're at an indie show that maybe doesn't play off as well on TV, but that's like a nitpick for me. It doesn't kill the show. It's just something that I kind of watch and I'm like, oh, that could be cleaned up a little bit.
I see that.
I'll give you an example, because it stands out to me when I see a team like Private Party, who I like a lot, but a lot of times it feels like when they're transitioning between moves, they don't know how to play to the cameras, or they don't know how to be TV characters in this moment.
Right. Now, I think
things like that can be tightened up.
I will say some of that roughness, I like. That was something that I liked about Nitro. When you watch Nitro and the way that it's presented, I think a lot of times people, maybe incorrectly, said that it was like unprofessional or like they didn't know what they were doing. I liked that show and this show feel a little rough. It feels a little more like a sports, like an actual sporting event. Mm. People don't always play to the camera. The camera isn't always in exactly the right spot. When I watch WWE, every single match has looked and has been shot the same way for 20 years. And to me, it makes it really tough to invest when I just feel like I'm watching a dance routine. Whereas with AEW, the fact that sometimes the camera is kind of a little out of place. I mean, this is a thing with Nitro too. It just makes it feel real to me. Now, I do agree when you talk about stuff that maybe feels a little more indie, some of the stuff that maybe feels a little more overly choreographed with AEW. I do sense that, where like maybe it would work better if you were there live, because you're not seeing it from a specific angle, and these guys are still adapting to working on television, which is different, which I do think is something that they can work on and are getting better at. But I think that's also you take the good, and there's positive and negative to every kind of style. But I think the fact that they are embracing a working style that I would compare to, again, I'm going to go to Nitro here. What I loved about Nitro was you had clashes of different styles. You had these guys coming over from Japan. You had people coming up from Mexico. You had Canadian wrestlers. You had guys that were old WWE guys. And everyone kind of had a different way of working. And so when you put them together, you get these really interesting, like, oh, well, what happens if a Chris Benoit is in the ring with an Eddie Guerrero? If Dean Malenko is in the ring with Rey Mysterio? When these different styles, you know, hit up against each other, what interesting combinations do we have?
It's one of the examples I always use with AEW, Brian, and I'm sure you'll pick up on this because you are a son of the South, as am I. It's like when you go to the Golden Corral.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go to the Golden Corral and just get one thing.
Nope.
Because it's a buffet. They have options. You can get the seafood. You can get the steak. You can get the chocolate fountain. And that's – when I look at AEW, you're right. Like, they've got – guys that have worked in the WWE, they've got these indie stars. They've got the Joshi girls that are on the card. You know, you've got luchadors. You know, you've got old timers, up and comers. You know, and this great mix of everything. And so, if this match isn't to your liking, just sit down and wait 5 minutes because we've got a match that you might like.
Now, to your Golden Corral example, growing up in Atlanta, I went to Ryan's. We didn't really have Golden Corral as much, but my weird Franken food I'd always make is I would always get macaroni and cheese, and I'd put croutons in it. That was my thing as a kid.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
It's a little weird, but it's a kid thing to do.
Hashtag snack time. Hashtag snack time.
But here's the thing. Oh, we do not want to go down that road. But here's the thing. It's I was going to defend the macaroni and cheese. We're not going to go. They're not going to go down that path. But it's I like that when I, you know, when I tune into that show, and for example, Full Gear coming up, I'm excited to see Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley, because I'm like, these two have these different styles, and what is it going to be like when these two characters interact? What interesting melding are we going to get when we put those two together? I mean, that's partially why people were raving about that Joey Janela Omega match from a while ago, because it was like, wow, this guy and this guy together, like, what happens when these two characters kind of, you know, percolate together? And again, I know I'm ragging on it, but I think it is important to have these comparing and contrast, conversations. You watch Raw, you watch SmackDown, pretty much every match feels the same. If I say to you, hey, close your eyes and imagine Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin, or imagine Roman Reigns versus Bobby Lashley, do those two matches look different in your mind? Or are you kind of like, oh, yeah, I see how both those guys are, you know? Like,
they're exactly the same, except one of those matches comes with a cuckold angle.
Yes. I mean, it's you know, I
that's,
don't know.
That's like the croutons in Vince's macaroni right there.
I just think that I love that in AEW I watch it and people have unique personalities and they have unique ways of wrestling. That Sammy Guevara Adam Page match, I'm like, both these guys have their own set style, and what happens when you put the two of them together? You know, Sammy with his, like, I love that moment where he was on the top rope and made you think he was going to do like an elbow drop and just jumps down and slaps him in the face. Like, and I don't know. Like, I can't say enough about it, but that brings me back to what I was saying before, is that because they're giving the guys this freedom to go out there and figure it out, you know, it's the freedom of going to, say, you know, Phoenix and Pentagon or Omega or all these guys and saying, hey, and maybe I'm getting a little too high-minded here, but it's like, these people are all artists, and saying, hey, based on your experience with this art form, based on what you like to do as an artist, bring these artists together and let them create something. Mm. Now, I think when you're talking about the main event, I think we were talking about the very top talent in this company, that is something that they absolutely can handle. I think when you're starting to look at the people a little lower down who are still getting seasoned, that's where it starts to feel a little rougher. When you give that same freedom to Private Party. But I will say that those groups, I think, will only get better through the trial and error rather than the hand-holding of, we're going to teach you the one way that works and you can do this one way. But if you kind of fall outside of that, you're kind of lost.
And I think that extends to another complaint that I've been seeing about AEW that I think is, again, one of those growing pains, something that'll get worked out. Something that will get worked out in time, and that's the women's division.
Yes.
Because, you know, granted, it hasn't been the focus. It hadn't been front and center, and a lot of that is because for the first 4 weeks of this program, we had a tag tournament that we had to talk about, and then we had to get ready for a pay-per-view that's coming up. So you really didn't have a lot of space for other things, including the women's division. What have you made so far of Rio as the champion and, you know, some of the matches we've seen from the women thus far? Because I haven't been blown away, but it's certainly nothing that I would say can't be fixed and can't be improved over time.
I think Riho did a great job of throwing that first night, her and Nyla Rose. I think Riho is really great in the ring. One of the arguments has been that they're not doing enough promos, they're not doing enough video packages, they're not getting more people over, which I do think that, if I had to guess, that's probably because the majority of the people they have on their roster are better wrestlers than personalities, and they figure that's probably the best way to get them over. I do agree, though, that sometimes some of these matches could lose a minute and a half to 2 minutes, and that could be dedicated to, you know, showcasing some people.
Yeah, like the was it Dark where they did the Britt Baker promo this week?
Right. Yeah,
I thought that was great, and it's something we haven't really seen from this character up to this point. But if you're only watching Dynamite proper, you wouldn't know about it.
Right, and I feel like that's some stuff that could make its way onto the show. And I don't know if it's there's still a pretty small crew. You know, I'm not fully aware of what their production process could be. It could just be that they don't have the ability to turn that stuff around. that quickly. It could be just a matter of like how they time up their show. Like I don't know, but I would like to see them kind of correct that. I mean, if they were good, I mean, they
What you're saying, Brian, if I can read between the lines, Tony Khan, because we know he's listening. Mm-hmm. You need to get in contact with Brian Maxwell Mann on Twitter.
Not what I'm saying. Not what I'm saying at all. I have no interest in moving to Jacksonville.
It's a lovely town in the winter.
Whereas I live in New York, and it's going to be absolute shit for the next 6 months. I would like to see. I mean, if they're going to dedicate an entire segment to that Tony Schiavone, Cody Rhodes car ride, I think you could make the argument of, coming up next after the break, Riho is going to be in action. Before Riho comes out, you're like, hey, here's a quick look at Riho, and you have a minute long package that's a combination of interviews and match highlights, and then you go into her match and you cut a minute off the match. I think that would be good. And they have such what they have done so far video wise has been so great that even if, say, someone's not an amazing talker, or if they speak in another language, which, you know, can sometimes be a barrier, especially to a live promo, you can get around that. You can subtitle someone. You can showcase them in a completely different way. You can do a thing where other people are talking about them if need be. I would just like to see more of that. Maybe some post-match interviews with some people, because I do feel like I'm curious to see how they spend this time between Full Gear and the end of the year, because we kind of started the show when Dynamite premiered, and the top two matches were already known. We already knew they're going to be doing Omega Moxley, and we already knew they're going to be doing Cody and Jericho. So they kind of were already on these builds. So it'll be interesting where we're at.
And then you have the tag tournament take up a bulk of the show as well.
Right. And I feel like some of the complaints I've been hearing, and I was even just saying a little bit now in terms of like establishing these personalities, and you can't assume that the audience knows who these people are. I think they have done that, but they've done it in a very deliberate way. I think that over the past month and a half, they've shown us how big of a star Cody is. They've established Jericho as this top heel. They've established his group. They've established how important tag team wrestling is in this company, rather than if they just come out the very first night and said, hey, here's Cody. He's the biggest deal because we're telling you. They've done a lot more showing rather than telling.
And I think you're right, especially from the standpoint that now that they have this freedom after Full Gear on Saturday, it'll be very interesting, because I think you're going to get to see, not that the first six episodes weren't real, but you're going to get to see what this company can really do.
Right.
When they have time to tell stories, when they have time to build people up. And I'm excited, because what we've seen so far, even the worst episode of Dynamite has been better than outside of that Friday SmackDown where the Saudi trip hijacked the show and we had the NXT call-ups. Outside of that show, everything on Dynamite has been better than Raw or SmackDown.
Totally agree. I think I'm going to say one last positive thing about AEW, then I'll jump into trashing WWE with you. I do think it'd be great if they could pivot Jim Ross once he gets off commentary. I think him having a weekly interview segment would be a good idea. And by interview segment, I don't mean Piper's Pit. I don't even think he's necessarily in the middle of the ring. But if it was every week, there's the JR sit down where JR sits down with a different talent and you present a 3-minute taped interview with that person. If it's a set part of the week, every week, I don't think it's a big enough tune out thing that you're going to lose, you know, half your audience. I think if you establish it as a weekly thing where it's like, hey, every week, JR profiles one of the people in AEW that he thinks important and you pair it with, hey, he sits down and talks with Darby Allin. We show you 3 minutes on Darby Allin. We come back from that video and we show you a quick 4-minute Darby Allin match. I think the more that they can do things like that, I think that'll really go
a long way. And that's something right there that you're saying, Brian. That's something that anybody that watches traditional sports, football, baseball, basketball, whatever, they're already conditioned to do.
Exactly.
Because that's part of the pregame show. That's part of the halftime show. So something like that with Jim Ross wouldn't be so out of the ordinary that it would make one of those fans tune out.
And I don't think that things like that are so outside the realm of possibility. I'm not saying that's not a thing that they haven't thought of or that they aren't already actively planning to do. Philosophically, I think AEW is in the right place. The biggest knocks I have against them are some of the guys need a little bit of seasoning, and I think just budgetarily, where they're at financially kind of hurts them. People's gear could look better. The music is still not super great. I just think some of that presentation could be brought up a little bit, which hopefully, you know, over time it will. But right now, the biggest thing, the most important thing, and this will be the pivot into WWE, is that philosophically, they're in the right place. They clearly, I think, are viewing the product in the proper way. We're seeing audiences react to it. We're seeing it connect. Now let's go over to WWE, where I was just kind of – this past Monday, I watched my first full episode. And I was watching it, and I even talked about it with someone who's been in the company more recently than me, where WWE is deliberately the way that it is. It isn't like they just keep, you know, slipping on a pie, delivering the script every week. The show is designed for an international audience, meaning that it is designed, like, that's why these long matches take place, because those are easier to sell overseas. Yeah. Constant promos are more difficult. Now, I'm not saying that WWE shouldn't be a global business. I'm just saying they should diversify and not just present the same one product for everybody. But that's a whole other conversation. Their show is deliberately very taxing. It is a philosophical problem that is driving audiences away and that is not getting people over. Mm. And it's crazy that when you watch SmackDown, where because of all of these extenuating circumstances, they were forced for one night to abandon the way they make television. They were and that's the thing. It wasn't like, oh, they turned, you know, chicken shit into chicken salad. It wasn't like, oh, their back was against the wall and they delivered. It wasn't, oh, WWE is always, you know, they're always pitch hitters. No. When they are forced to abandon their philosophy and they're just scrounging, like, well, we just got to put on the best show we can, then they put on a really good show.
Yeah.
Because what was the big thing that made that Friday night episode work so well? It was everything people wanted for the longest mm-hmm. time. It was fresh faces being put over strong. When you watch those, there was no, and it's actually wild where the one segment on that show that did not work was Bayley versus Nikki Cross. The audience mm-hmm. wasn't losing their shit for that match. And that's a thing where it's like, hey, we're doing everything right. We're working the WWE style. It's two people that are on TV all the time. They're pushed acts. This is what you're supposed to be reacting to. No, what they did react to was the 90-second match that Rhea Ripley and Tegan Nox it was Tegan Nox, right? Was her partner?
Yeah.
And they go over strong, or the angle backstage where Bianca Belair debuts, or that match between Adam Cole and Daniel Bryan, where yep. this has not been confirmed, but they had to have been calling that thing in the ring, just based on what we know from when people got to the building.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't, you know, talking on the, like, they probably had 10 to 15 minutes backstage to talk about what they wanted to do. But what they did was they went out there, they reacted to the audience, and they put on the best match they could. Now, fast forward 2 days later, Raw learned none of those lessons. Cole and Rollins just had a match that lost a lot of viewers, that was not nearly as exciting. The angles weren't as, you know, it was just, everything was just a lot more WWE because they had the time to second guess themselves. And there were too many, you know, cooks in the kitchen versus that Friday night SmackDown. It was, hey, here's what we're going to do. And we got to do it really quickly. And there's a much smaller group of people who are putting it together. And oh my God, we're up against the wall. All we can worry about is making a good show for this audience and sending them home happy. And they're not pissed that we didn't deliver any of the advertised stars.
Brian, man, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Since you brought him up, and obviously you're not in the company anymore, but having knowledge of how that company operates, what's up with your boy Seth Rollins?
Okay. I mean, if we want to have the Rollins conversation.
Let's get into it.
Let's have the Rollins
I don't know when the next time we're going to talk on a podcast is, so let's put it all out on the table.
I was just looking to do a State of the Union, so why not? Let's talk about Seth Rollins. They got to turn him. You know, it's like the audience – I think it's the same problem they had with Roman. They certainly had it with Cena. I think the audience just wants to boo him for a while. Mm. You know, like, And
how did it turn so quickly though? Because if you go back 6 months or a year, like, people were genuinely behind this dude, weren't they?
I think it really is a mixture of two things. I think the booking has been awful. I mean, I think he was booked relatively strong with WrestleMania, even though they kind of, the whole story was this guy stands no, he has no chance against Brock Lesnar, which I don't think really made him look great. But then he had a very strong, decisive win against Brock. Now, the problem was coming out of that, they did not have any strong challenges for him. So he works programs with Bobby Lashley. The whole thing with him and Becky was not a good idea. He looked awful throughout the entire Fiend program. That Hell in the Cell match was a travesty. Not a travesty, it was a calamity. But even if we want to take everything on screen, booking-wise, that they've done a number with him on, which, by the way, this happens on every TV show, or it can happen on every TV show. Sometimes a character has a bad arc. There's plenty of seasons of TV that we can look at and be like, oh, well, that's when the show kind of lost it. Or, you know, did you watch Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
Phenomenal show. You remember when they fucking murdered that person? That was a bad part of the show. When Landry killed somebody and they had to hide it. That was a bad part of the show, and we just kind of ignore it. It's like the show was going through some weird, you know, like, internal struggles. They were desperate for ratings on NBC, and they tried something, and it was dumb and bad. And then they had to course correct. They didn't just go like, oh, fuck, well, let's have Landry kill more people just because that's the path we're on now. Also, Seth, like, so everything on screen has been awful. That Saudi Arabia, like, that Crown Jewel match, I don't see how he could have had that match described to him, participated in it, seen how it was laid out, see everything of how he was asked, just everything he was asked to do in that match, and blame the fans. And think that it's just people on Twitter who want to complain. That was a match that was in front of a dead crowd that couldn't even see the match. So they're leaving because it's like a Falls Count Anywhere match in a stadium under red lights. So what the fuck are you doing? They kill his finish. He loses when he gets like blinded by like Hocus Pocus. And then he gets no comeback and the feud's just over. Like, he's not going after the Fiend again. Like, that's just over. So, ignoring everything they've done on TV as a number, this guy has done himself zero favors online, getting people on his side. And yeah, you can debate, like, is he the best wrestler? Is WWE the best wrestling in the world? Should he call AEW the minor leagues? Whatever, all that stuff that there's two sides on. When people really turned on the guy was when he buried Jon Moxley for leaving the company. Like, that was seen as, you're stabbing your friend in the back. And who knows, like, maybe they weren't as close as they were shown on television, but people see those two linked. And Roman Reigns was asked the question. Seth Rollins was asked the question. And Roman answered it right, and Seth did not. And I think that's really when the split started to happen. And that, there's been plenty of top guys in WWE, especially over the last couple of years, who have been booed, who have lost the crowd because of bad creative. We saw it with Roman.
Yeah.
But no one ever got to the point where they disliked Joe. I think everyone was able to, in all of their criticisms of Roman, were able to say, the character Roman Reigns is badly cast and badly written. Nothing against Joe. Nothing against Joe.
And I know he's listening, so I will put him on Front Street. We've got a listener, Jermaine Jones, out in Chi-Town, who is the biggest Roman Reigns hater on the planet. Like, nobody hates Roman Reigns more than Jermaine, but I bet you if you ask Jermaine, do you hate Joe Anoa'i? He'd be like, nah, Joe's probably a cool dude. I just hate the character of Roman Reigns.
Yeah, it's like Joe seems like a cool guy who, you know, is a good dad and a loving husband. And he's a hard worker, you know? Like, no one's going to say anything bad about Joe, and he is very talented. The problem that Seth is dealing with is that Seth Rollins is a awful wrestling character, a terrible babyface, and Colby Lopez kind of seems like a dick. Like, that's what he's dealing with. It isn't just like, oh, you know, fans are gonna boo the top guy. It's like, really? Because I didn't hear Kofi Kingston having that issue.
Like, don't get me started on Kofi Kingston this week, Brian. Man,
that's another thing. Like, again, we're just doing it. We're rolling it all out. State of the Union thing. What the fuck did they do? What the fuck did they do there? Like. And that's the other thing that's so wild. I think if you look at this past month of WWE booking, WWE is like the worst of both worlds. They're erratic. They don't see things through, but they're also very set in their ways. So you'll have that situation of like, man, all of these matches on TV are really dying and we're losing our viewers. Fuck it. Keep doing 15-minute matches with no finishes. But then like, oh, well, we got to get over this Kane Velasquez Brock Lesnar thing. Let's put the title on Brock. Let's completely kill this guy who's been our champion for 6 months and just tell everyone he was a lame duck champion. If you ever invested in him at all, you're an idiot. And, you know, screw you for taking any of this dumb wrestling shit seriously. And then a couple like weeks later, you're burying Kane Velasquez. Yep. You're moving Brock over to Raw. And clearly none of this had been fully thought through. Kofi is now just not caring about it. So throw everything out that I just said that's just all bad television writing. On top of it, the fact that he was your first black champion and how big of a deal it legitimately was and then how much they played it up to their own benefit. And that's how you do it. That's where you go with it. And then not understanding why that's bad or why that's wrong. Because, yes, Brock has gone in and he has squashed a lot of top guys and he has honestly ruined a lot of careers and table this. Next thing we should talk about, Brock Lesnar right now in the WWE right now currently is worse than Hulk Hogan was in WCW.
I like that tease.
as much as he has destroyed top guys and sent the message very clearly to the audience that you should not give a fuck about anyone here except for me, no one has been buried the way that Kofi Kingston was buried.
No. People want to bring up Cena or Finn Balor or AJ. At least they got some offense.
Exactly. They didn't go 7 seconds. Even Randy, who the whole rest stop in the fucking blood. No one got put down in 7 seconds.
Yeah, and I talked a little bit about it on the NWA podcast, which you can find on the Kings of Sport Patreon. I found it very disrespectful.
Right.
And not only the Kofi, but to me as a fan, like you said, Brian, for investing in this guy who is outside of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the only black WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Like, it made me feel like an idiot for caring about the story that you told me, because you just told me that the story didn't mean anything because this guy lost in 7 seconds without getting a punch in.
And it also just shows you how out of touch WWE is, that they thought they could do that and that it would be okay. And that it would, again, making new fans and entertaining your audience. That they thought anyone in the audience would be happy to see that, or that it would be perceived as heat on Lesnar. And Kofi's not the kind of guy you want to see that with.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, Chris from LA, who was in the arena for that first SmackDown on Fox, he was like, after the camera stopped rolling and Brock and Heyman go back up the ramp, like, the fans were just chanting bullshit because of the way that they did Kofi.
I mean, I think that if you go back and you look at that Hell in a Cell match, I think if the Hell in a Cell match with Fiend ended with the Fiend killing Seth Rollins in 7 seconds, we would not be complaining. And no one would be saying, like, oh, why'd you do Seth that way? And like that, no one would have these kind of issues. The Kofi reign was unique and special. And I don't know. And it's just for so many things. And WWE does this weird thing where they like patronize and kind of make fun of their audience. Who's like, oh, they're just complaining because they didn't get what they want. It's like, yes, that's how buying entertainment should work. Yes, I spent my time or I bought a ticket to go see a show and I'm allowed to be upset if I didn't like it. Like, that's the relationship. Like, if I go see a movie and I hate it and I, you know, express that online, are they going to come, like, are the makers of the movie going to come to me and be like, oh, so you're just because you didn't get what you wanted? It's like, yeah, that's how it works. I paid for a product and I didn't like what I got, and I can complain about it. Yeah. And for all the issues that WWE has in their whole history portraying black characters, like, that's how you do that? Like,
especially since you know, like there's maybe a one in a million chance, Brian, that Kofi gets some comeback on this, but what faith do I have? What have they shown me as a viewer to make me get behind Kofi if he does get a shot at this again?
That's the thing. They're not going to do it. I mean, I think that they're going – the fact they're going to Ray and Brock at Survivor Series shows that they're not going to do it, because on a show that's supposed to be interbrand, we're doing a Raw-only title match, whereas Brock versus Kofi would make total sense. Like, I don't know how you do this. It would be interesting if, you know, Brock did his whole, like, huff and puff, like – tantrum of quitting SmackDown and going to Raw, only to show up and be told, well, you fucking idiot, if you'd stayed on SmackDown, we could have given you Ray at Survivor Series because it was interpromotional. We can't give you Ray because it's not interpromotional, so you need to face someone on SmackDown. And then you could do, you know, him and Kofi. But no, they're never going to give him that momentum back. It's a shame, you know, because they just pretty much tell you, hey, this was a lame duck period. That portion of SmackDown did not matter. And so we just put it on a guy, because who cares? Who cares who had the belt? Like, they're essentially telling you who cared who had the belt during that portion of that television show. And I think most people going into that match had accepted that Kofi was going to lose.
Yeah.
But losing that way. Because fans are smart. Like, fans aren't looking at that and being like, man, I'm mad at Brock Lesnar now. It's like, no, I'm mad at this company. Like, this is just another reason why I should not invest in care.
Yeah, like, even if we're to believe Brian, man, okay, let's look at the WWE as if it is just a TV show and these are characters on the TV show.
Yeah.
The character of Kofi Kingston that they've shown me wouldn't just run and jump into a damn F5. Like, even if I'm just looking at this from a character standpoint, that match made no sense.
Yeah, he came into it with... And here's the thing, if they were kind of a little smarter and they were telling the story, which they're not, because spoiler for us talking now, but it won't be a spoiler when the audience hears it, the New Day win the tag titles on SmackDown. And so that doesn't feel to me that they're telling the story that this guy's having a hard time, like, getting his confidence back. But if they're telling the story of, wow, I really fucking blew it. I had a game plan, and it was the wrong game plan. I thought I could hit this guy. You know, you could even do a sit down interview and be like, Kofi, like, how did that happen? Like, you've been this fighting champion for the last 6 months. Look at all these people you beat. How did that happen? And if he's like, you know what, I went back, I watched Brock Lesnar matches, I saw the one guy who had the best, you know, who really took him off his feet was Goldberg. Goldberg came with a spear right away. And I thought if I tried to do a similar approach of try to knock him off balance right away, I thought that was my best shot. And it was wrong. It was the wrong game plan. You could tell that story and him, like, maybe losing his confidence and kind of starting from the bottom and going after you know, the IC title. You could tell a really great story of, like, him being pissed that Brock ran away and that he's not going to get that shot again. You could tell that story. But it's just tough. It's like, well, where do you see him? Like, where do you slot this guy? What is the future for the New Day right now?
Like even hearing the spoiler that they won the titles, like, that, I think that makes me as angry as when he lost the title, because it's like, okay, so this guy's good enough to have a title, just not that title.
Right. And I mean, honestly, right now, you couldn't have known this ahead of time, but where we're at right now, if you're able to pivot, I would break up the New Day. Because Xavier's gone for so long.
Yeah, he's out for a minute.
He's going to be out for a while. So I think if you're losing him, why not try it? Just try it. Experiment with breaking these guys apart. Like, maybe you could even do a thing where Kofi gets a little pissed because he blames Big E. It's like, this was Big E's idea. Like, we watched the tapes. His game plan was this. He told me this is how to go after Brock. And maybe that's where, like, they start to grow apart. And you could, you know, break him up and maybe Kofi goes heel for a while. I don't know. But I would at least try it for a while. And you can always bring them back together. That's one that if it doesn't work.
So you want Kofi to go AJ Styles, Lone Wolf, go grab a motorcycle and go meet his
leather. I want the leather jacket.
Leather jacket with the hood on it.
I want all of it. But no, I, I, I would just try it. Just attempt it, because I think that group is so beloved that if it doesn't work, I think you can bring them back together, especially with a returning Xavier Woods, and people will just forget it ever happened.
Yeah, because maybe he's the one that brings the family back together, so to speak.
Exactly. And it's kind of like a, listen, we just had too much going on. Like, we had a lot of obstacles to overcome. We had Kofi losing the title. We had one of our guys, you know, who's, you know, you could argue Xavier Woods is the glue who keeps us together, and he wasn't there. It was just a lot for this team to survive, and we couldn't. And you know, hey, you know, we're back together. The best days are yet to come. You could tell that story, you know, down the road. But right now it's kind of like, okay, if we're just keeping New Day together and they're just winning the title again, like, who knows? I don't know. I hope they can, get it back. They can get something out of Kofi now, because to just say, yeah, he won the title once, that was part of his career, I think is missing a real opportunity.
Especially coming off of that moment, which is arguably the biggest moment from WrestleMania this year.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think even though people didn't go into it thinking this would happen, I think it definitely overshadowed the main event.
Yeah. So let's talk about your boy Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Let's take the Lesnar bump challenge, Brian Mann.
We threw that out there. Well, I one last thing on Kofi that I'll say. You can say that his title run was lukewarm. You can say that he didn't have the strongest challengers. You can say it was just lame duck killing time. But one thing that he had as the top babyface of a brand, maybe he wasn't like, you know, lighting the world on fire, but the audience actually liked him.
Yep, they never turned on him.
That's a very small bar to pass, that a top babyface be liked by the audience. But that honestly is a bar that it's been a long time since someone cleared that.
Yeah, like the only time you even got maybe an inkling of the crowd turning was that the match in Toronto with Orton. But other than that, they were behind him.
And that you could definitely say was not his fault. That was a bad match that was poorly laid out and was a bad storyline. But at no point were people turning against Kofi. Yeah. I think that's also why I think – because people liked Kofi so much, I think they were able to give him a little bit more leeway when it came to, you know, the weak challengers and programs that didn't necessarily light the world on fire. You know, I have my own thoughts on how they could have started that program a lot stronger, but hey, whatever. Orton should have been the first guy, not the last guy that he faced, is all I'll say. Brock Lesnar is worse in 2019 than Hulk Hogan was between the years of 98 and 2000.
that's a hot take, brother.
I mean, honestly, you convinced me I'm wrong. I mean, he has got, you know, when you look at when he came into WWE, he was playing business almost too much. The fact that he put Cena over the first night of his return, the fact that he's losing to Triple H, he didn't really get even a little bit of his mojo back until beating Taker's streak, which I think in hindsight is questionable. You know, we could certainly, you know, ask if that was the best move. And then he, you know, gets that title run. He defeats Cena. And listen, if Roman Reigns had been ready, all of that makes sense, getting us to Roman Reigns. I think that's the one title reign of Brock that you can defend. However, since then, having your main title not around, not present on the show, and also not being defended, people not being put over. And we've gotten to a point throughout years of these negotiations and the way that he's played Vince and the possible UFC return, he has Vince wrapped around his finger. He doesn't do anything that he doesn't want to do. He doesn't wrestle longer than he wants to. He doesn't put anyone over that he doesn't want to. I think he has Heyman in his corner, so he's smart enough to know that, hey, I've got to drop this belt sometimes. But if you look at how he has been kind of the dominant face for that period of time, and I think it's very hard to defend that Brock Lesnar's continued presence on WWE TV is a positive.
I think, like, obviously he's a big star, one of the biggest stars in the company, and maybe that speaks to the fact that they haven't been able to create other stars.
Yeah, because he's held everyone else down. Like, but you, like, don't get here's sorry to cut you out. You don't get Rock or Austin if Boss Rutan shows up every 6 months and beats them both up and then disappears.
Shout out to Boss Rutan, who I almost worked with in Japan one time.
Oh, damn.
And for anybody who wants to hear that story, you can check out what was the show? It was when Chris Charlton was doing his New Japan.
Oh, Eggshells, that one?
Eggshells, yeah. Okay. When he was doing the Eggshells companion show, the episode that I was on, I want to say it was 97, 96 or 97 New Japan, and we talked about how I almost worked with Boss Rutten in Japan. I think with Brock, the big issue for me is not that he's around, is that he always has to be the champion when he's around, because you could tell all these Brock Lesnar stories without involving the belt.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's how he's utilized. Mm. Is the big thing. And just in the same way,
why did Kane and Brock at Crown Jewel need a belt?
True. That's a very big issue. I mean, especially when it was revealed that match was just Hogan Warrior 98 of, hey, bring in the guy, I want my win back. But I think if you compare it to, like, let's say again, like, let's look at Hogan at the end of WCW and when he comes into WWE. Mm-hmm. He was used properly for those couple of years in WWE. He came in, he'd wrestle one, maybe two matches a year against someone you've built up for him, and then he goes away. When we saw on the flip side in WCW, he was past the point of being worthwhile. Mm. But he was still being treated as kind of like a full-time-ish character. But it'd be a thing where, like, he comes back and he wins a belt, no one really cares. And no one wants to see him on TV every week. And no one wants to see him beat everybody. Yeah. And the people that he, like, deems worthy of his time, you know, whatever. Not really helping. And the fact that Brock is calling all of his own shots and doing it with the top belt, because essentially what it is, hey, there's Brock Lesnar and then there's everybody else. Mm-hmm. And they don't make you forget it. And the fact that Vince and all of them, they just have this hard on as well for, like, former UFC people. Like, if you come in from UFC, you are automatically better than every single person that we employ on this roster. You're a real fighter, and there are.
Right. And at least with somebody like Ronda Rousey, like, she wasn't there to do the Brock thing. Like, she actually was there week in and week out, and I can respect her from that standpoint. But Brock, you're right. Guy makes his own schedule, makes his own rules.
Exactly. Yeah. And she was there for a limited time, and there was, from the beginning, an ultimate goal of how will this get one of our people over.
Exactly. Yep. Because you don't get Becky without Rousey.
Exactly. And if Ronda comes back for a period of time, great. Like, she can have another real, like, interesting run, because people will connect to that, and there'll be hopefully new opponents for her. Mm-hmm. That has not been the case with Brock. Like, this is wild. Literally, he has made three strong challengers during his entire run here. He has made Seth, he mm-hmm. has made Roman, and he mm-hmm. made Goldberg. Those are the people he put over as potential credible threats for a match at some point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, let's look at a guy who honestly was there, who had superstar potential, Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman has had 7 world title matches. He has lost all of them, and 5 of those losses were to Brock.
Mm.
You're telling me that had he won one of those at some point? And this brings me into a much kind of larger point that, a friend and I were, pretty stoned watching wrestling. And, we came to this idea, which I will defend. And I think is, worth kind of looking at, as AEW, I think has opened a lot of people's eyes at just how kind of very narrowly we were looking at the wrestling industry in America, just through WWE's, you know, kind of lens. Every single generation of every art form is better than the last, almost uniformly across the board, because that new generation, because they know everything the last generation knew, and they're improving upon it.
Yeah,
that's why you have to look at things cult, like, relatively. Like, if people want to say, like, well, who was better, Tupac or like, who was better, Dre or Kendrick? And it's like, well, you have to kind of take Dre in the time of when he was doing it versus Kendrick. I think it's pretty easy to argue that he is a better rapper than Dre because he grew up aware of everything Dre did. So not only does he mature with that knowledge, he then gets to add on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pro wrestling is exactly the same. You know, I tweeted this thing the other day where it's like, you know, people say like, well, I look at the industry, I don't see a Rocker in Austin. You're right. I see 10 guys that are better than Rock in Austin. You see that promo that Jon Moxley did on AEW a couple weeks ago. That's I'm seeing Piper there, and I'm seeing someone who could eventually eclipse Piper if given the time and given the ability to mature in that level. When you look at the talents now and you compare them to their counterparts in the Attitude Era, they are all better. You know, if we just sort of look at it, Dolph Ziggler is better than Billy Gunn was. Bobby Roode is better than Val Venus was.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman is better than Big Show was. He's better than, you know, Roman Reigns is bigger, is better than Undertaker was. If you kind of compare everyone to their logical sort of like comparison point from the Attitude Era, they are all better because the talent pool has gotten bigger and better. And yeah, we kind of dipped in talent right after the Attitude Era, but right now we're seeing all these people that grew up watching that late 90s boom period. The talent is so incredible. Like even just like a guy like Sami Zayn, right? Mm-hmm. Closest comparison to a Sami Zayn in the Attitude Era, I don't know who would it be. Fucking right now, Harvey Whippleman, honestly, the way they're using him. And he's like, Sami Zayn could be a top babyface tomorrow. Just the amount of talent that is just sitting around not being used.
Yep.
It's so phenomenal. This isn't a talent issue. This isn't, we just don't have the guys to get over. It isn't, oh my God, we lost all the best guys, and so we need to lean on Brock Lesnar. Seth Rollins, while not as large and genetically modified, is a better wrestler than Triple H was.
Yep.
You know, AJ Styles, you know, you can make the argument of him and Shawn. You know, Daniel Bryan is better than Chris Benoit was. He's a better wrestler, and he's a better talker. Like, everyone is better than the previous generation.
Even the guy that isn't being used, like an Apollo Crews, in ring, he's better than probably half the undercard during the Attitude Era.
I know, like, who would be, like, just a kind of anonymous, middle-of-the-pack guy like Apollo Crews? And like, let's compare him.
Like a Scotty Too Hotty.
Sky Johnny or Albert or something like that.
Yeah.
He's better than them. Even just the gnome game guys sitting around. Fucking Drake Maverick is better than Crash Holly. Like, they are better. And so that's like Eric Young, better than Gangrel. Like, you have a lot of talents. And, you know, I was looking at
And women, like, the women are leaps and bounds over their counterparts.
Like, there's no comparing. And the women, I think they do a better job of, because I think they are, because of Stephanie, I think they're a little bit more sensitive to not messing that up. I think they do handle their women's division with a little bit more care than they do the men's division. But I was watching just a random 2000 episode of SmackDown, right? And the thing about every single match had a purpose, and every match was usually there to showcase one of the talents in the match. That isn't to say that it was a squash match where it was, okay, Rikishi is going to face some guy you've never seen before, some random jobber. No, like, he would be facing someone a little lower than him, but someone who still has a strong personality. In this particular episode, is him and Val Venus. And you're watching, you're like, okay, I know we're pushing Rikishi right now. He's going to beat Val Venus. This match is here to showcase Rikishi's moveset. It wasn't. We're going to do 15 straight minutes. Val Venus is going to get the heat on him the entire time, and then we're going to do a non-finish. And when I look at guys that they have on that roster, I think Eric Young is a perfect example. Eric Young is such a great personality, such a great talker. You're telling me you can't keep him at least slightly over so that he's at the level of a Al Snow, so that when he comes out, he gets somewhat of a pop, but he can put other guys over in an interesting way. Like, they have as much talent as they have, and they can't even at the minimum put on a show as good as Attitude Era Raw's, where the wrestling was shit. And now the talent is so much better, and you can't even do what you're doing 20 years ago. The talent has advanced, and the booking and the philosophy hasn't.
Well, let's talk about an area that might be a little bit positive, Brian, maybe the most positive aspect of the WWE in 2019, and that is NXT, who is now on the USA Network. What have you made of AEW's rival in this new Wednesday Night War, my friend?
I do think that the competition is helping both of them. That being said, I think WWE is in the long run, extremely short-sighted in doing this, if I do say so myself. I think they're burning their audience out. I think we're seeing that with the ratings. And I think it actually hurt SmackDown the most, because I think you got your Monday show. Maybe you had a Sunday show some weeks. Then you got your Wednesday show. And then by the time Friday comes, and Friday's already a bad night for TV, I think a lot of people just sort of say, like, I'm wrestling out. Mm-hmm. I'm wrestling out for the week. And that should be their biggest show.
That's not even counting the people that watch AEW or Impact or NWA.
Exactly. And that still is a pretty small – I'm just talking about, like, your casual wrestling fan base that were like, hey, our numbers are going to go up because we're on Fox now. I mean, 4.5 million people watched that very first episode. They are now at half that. So, listen, we can talk about AEW's ratings. SmackDown has lost half of their audience in a month. I think that's a pretty big deal. I just think that NXT, again, it's like I watch it and I look and I see what they did on that episode of SmackDown with that talent and that booking philosophy. And then I look at what they do on Wednesday nights and I'm just scratching my head saying, why is this just not being done on Raw and SmackDown? Mm-hmm. Like, why are these talents not being pushed on that show? And why are characters not being presented this way? I mean, Io Shirai looks so fucking cool coming out to that Poppy performance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, why am I not getting that on Raw? They have the money. They have the budget. Like, you could commission, YBN Namir to make a theme song for one of your guys and then perform it. You have the money to do that. So why aren't you? Why aren't you the cool brand? Like, all the things that are working over here, why aren't they being done on Raw and SmackDown? And I think that one thing with NXT is that weekly TV really wasn't their strong suit. And I still think they're learning, because all they kind of had to worry about, like, they never had to worry about viewers. They never had to worry about any of that stuff. So they could just kind of get by on being like, oh, we'll set up our programs and we'll tell our stories. Now I think they're in a mode where it's like, for example, that thing with bringing on Poppy. I don't think they would have just done that on their weekly TV,
right?
If it's just on the network. Now, if their goal is to compete against AEW and drive down their rating, as long as NXT is available on the network the next day, they will not win. That's just my belief. I think, especially with a younger audience, I think a younger audience understands, well, one of these shows is live and that matters, and the other show will be available the very next day on this platform that I pay for. So I think that kind of that just sort of makes AEW feel like the more important thing you've got to watch right now.
Especially like NXT has never been, and it's one of the inherent problems I think with the network. NXT was never the show that conditioned their audience that you have to watch this first run.
Right.
It's a show you can watch whenever it's convenient for you.
Right. And I think they're learning. I think they're learning all that. I do think they're getting better. And for the sake that what NXT is now really is what Raw and SmackDown should be now. And if WWE had a halfway competent board or leadership, Hunter should be.
What are you talking about, Brian? Man, this is the same company that produced great shirts like that, Jordan.
No,
oh, okay. Never mind.
That's
never mind.
Well, so Hunter, Paul Levesque, whatever you want to say, he should be running Raw and SmackDown. Vince should be completely out of this equation right now. That part's just undeniable, I think, at this point. I think the direction that the company is headed in when it comes to Raw and SmackDown is just so wildly off base. What would they be doing if a murderous dictatorship was not paying them like $200 million a year to put on shows? Like, when you get to a point where your actual customers are such a small part of your overall business strategy, I think that's you're way off base. But they have gotten these huge TV contracts. Like, they're very fortunate that where the TV landscape is right now, live programming like that is so highly sought after. Now, it would be great if they partnered that with a desire to increase their audience, which doesn't seem to be the goal. Whereas NXT, their goal always has been, and they've been very productive at this, of always getting larger, always getting bigger. And it's just crazy when you see the kind of stars they've been able to get and create on NXT that just instantly flounder when it, when they get to the main roster. I think something that has been so exposing, and this was, again, 2 weeks ago, that I think really opened my eyes, were on the same night you got that Jon Moxley promo and you got that Finn Balor promo. And these were two guys who, on the main roster, one was made the smiley, happy abs guy who sometimes put on weird body paint, and the other guy did condiments comedy and like was like hitting people over the head with like ferns. Those were these are two guys who honestly are stars. They are stars. They're maybe not mega stars. They're maybe not superstars.
Yeah.
But I think they, their personality, they have star potential. And if you crank it up and if you kind of attach the rocket to them, and this was something just recently I was thinking about The Rock. And if you kind of compare when he starts being The Rock in The Nation versus when he's The Rock 3 years later. And the big difference is that in the beginning, he was a guy playing a star. And in the end, he was a star.
Yeah.
And that process can only happen with the company getting behind him, him main eventing WrestleManias, him getting the crowd behind him, and quite frankly, him getting more money and him having increased popularity. Like, the audience can tell if the person they're watching is a star or if they're just a character reading a script. And because WWE, it almost feels like, doesn't want to actually make any of their guys stars. They don't.
The brand is bigger than the individual.
Exactly. They always want to kind of be controlling them. And Brock is the one guy who doesn't play by those rules. And so he's, that's why he's the only guy who feels like an actual star in that company. I don't know. I think it's just a thing where, like, maybe it's Vince. Maybe it is an actual calculated thing where they just don't want to make any of their guys that popular that they have leverage over them. They don't want a situation where you have, like, with Austin, where he doesn't like his creative, he walks and then comes back a huge baby face and can main event WrestleMania. They don't want someone who can do that. Cena never did that, even though they kind of have a falling out now. But they don't want guys who have that leverage. So I think it is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where they want, like, they need stars, but I don't think they actually want to create talents that are that powerful.
It's crazy because, you know, I think it's almost been like a whole generation of NXT call-ups that have been lost in this. And one of the key people in that is somebody that you and I used to rave about. He was our one spotlight of hope during the Review and Impact days, or one of the two spotlights of hope during the Review and Impact days. And that's EC3. Like, how do you ruin a guy like EC3?
Well, yeah. And again, EC3 is just one of those guys who, at least according to that Jon Moxley interview, just got on their bad side for a dumb fucking reason of, you know, the crowd. EC3 was supposed to be the babyface, but the crowd was cheering Dean Ambrose at a house show. And so they hold it against the guy and they never put him on fucking TV. And he's just like stuck in this. And here's the thing. I'm not saying EC3 is necessarily the top guy. Like, I'm not saying that.
No, he was never going to be Rock or Austin, but there's a middle ground between not being on TV and being the biggest star in the company.
But again, maybe he could have been. Like, I think when you compare the wrestling industry and what WWE has done to it and how it really has caused it to become so stagnant by signing so many people up to these long contracts and making it so they can't really go anywhere else, so they're just completely beholden. I mean, look at movies. There's tons of people who, if you were just standing back and looking on a sheet of paper, you would never say they become stars. Like, you know, like, fuck, let's look at a guy like Seth Rogen. So much stuff is working against that guy. But he was so talented. He connected. He worked so hard. And he built himself up. And now he's an extremely major player in Hollywood, not necessarily on screen, but also because of the writing and directing and everything that he's done. Like, because he had – I think when you allow – your talents to have that freedom and to sort of compete against each other and really like stand up and make an argument rather than they've created an environment where they encourage people to sit back and kind of wait for it. Even a guy like Seth Rollins, who's supposed to be the top guy, who's supposed to be the best wrestler in the entire world. If you look at the shit booking they give him and he goes out and does it, that doesn't read star to me.
It's crazy because Chris from LA was tweeting to me today about the Kofi situation. And he's like, because I guess Kofi gave an interview recently where he was talking about being disappointed with the way he lost his title. Yeah. And Chris is like, you know, isn't he a top guy? Why couldn't he have argued against that finish? And I'm like, come on. There's no way Kofi Kingston, of all people, is going to have enough autonomy to argue that this isn't the way my character should be presented.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anybody in the company other than Brock Lesnar that has that autonomy. And I think that hurts the business. Like, you don't ever want to give the performer total control, but they have to have a say in the art that they're presenting.
Right. And I don't think that, like, I don't want to get into the realm of, well, everyone's on social media all the time, because I think that's an incorrect way of going about it. Mm. But the fact that Seth can go online and he can tweet the kind of things that he did that sparked the conversation that it did, that clearly touched a nerve the way that it did. And then you come to TV on Monday and you ignore all of it.
Mm.
Like, what's that? Like, that's not smart. That's not. You know, that's not taking advantage of an opportunity. That's not seizing on your most passionate fans. Seth should have gone out that weekend, cut that fucking promo, saying that he's the best wrestler in the world, that this is the best company. Like, he should have said all of that. And you know what? Let the chips fall where they may. Like, some people will agree with him, some people will disagree with him. But make that strong character. Go that route with him. Instead, he has to go out, and at the time, he was involved in that dumb fucking angle with Baron Corbin. Like, it's not hard. Like, wrestling, honestly, is not that hard to, like, listen to your audience and make them happy. But that's not necessarily what they're in the market of doing. I was actually – it's so funny. Like, the smartest thing Vince could have done years ago, and I think we're actively seeing it now, because, yes, NXT is a brand – it is a promotion within WWE. But by and large, they kind of are separate companies. They have different ecosystems. They have different philosophies. They have different ways of making television. They have different ways of making stars. Everything's completely different. Like, they are not one and the same. Raw and SmackDown operate under the same kind of philosophy and umbrella. One of the smartest things Vince could have done, and they almost did it when they did the whole WCW thing, if they actually made Raw and SmackDown two completely separate, different groups of people. Different writers, different directors, different rosters. These two groups do not interact with each other. There needs to be a competition between these two groups. I think if you actually had created that, because I do think that exists a little bit between NXT and the main roster right now.
Yeah.
That's not to say, like, the guys don't get along, but I do think one group has a chip on the shoulder, and I don't think the main roster views it in the same way, but I do think it has encouraged NXT to be better, and I do think it's made people loyal to that brand, and that's why people are actually caring about the Survivor Series of Raw and SmackDown versus NXT. Oh, wow. That, like, people actually are loyal to NXT. That means something. Whereas Raw and SmackDown is like, they're kind of the same show. People bounce back and forth. Who cares?
They just wear different color shirts.
They wear different. It's like, the only reason why I care is because you're telling me to care. Mm-hmm. I don't actually care about any of this stuff. I guess to wrap, you know, kind of all of that up is that, I think WWE's, like, star-making process is just so out of whack. And I think, there's a lot of philosophical reasons for that. But I think the constant reliance on Brock Lesnar is a big problem. The guy, if you want to argue how he's popular, he's a spectacle. Okay. This guy should not be holding your title.
You know, Brian, you said something very important in that last segment about leaving your audience happy. So I think we should end on a positive note, and let's get back to the land of All Elite Wrestling. They got a big.
Before we go to that,
yes.
I just want to. Sorry, I know you're trying to transition, but I'm ruining all of those today. I'm very sorry.
You're stepping on my segue, sir.
I know. Well, I'll give it right back. But I just want to say one other thing that I think WWE should be doing. I get philosophically why they do it and business wise why they think it's best. I think these lengthy title reigns are the wrong way to go. I think in an era where there's just so much more competition for the audience's attention, and where you have so many guys that need to be established as top stars, and you need to build a new top crop, I think AJ holding the title for 9 months and Brock holding the title for as long as he does, and Seth and all of these and all these things. I don't
especially
think
with Brock, we only see him, you know, once or twice a month.
I don't think it's good for business. I recently was thinking about The Rock, and I went back. His longest title reign was like 100 days. Like he did not hold the title for a significant amount of time. And if you go back again during that Attitude Era, titles were changing every 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think when people say you want to see more title changes, they go like, oh, like WCW? No, I'm not saying like we do 26 in a year and like they're changing multiple times every week. I'm not saying that. But I do – like I look at that AJ run. You're saying that Nakamura couldn't have won the title in there for a month? Mm-hmm. Saying Samoa Joe couldn't have held it in there? Saying that Braun Strowman couldn't have had the belt at some point? I think that there's just a lot of guys that need a run with the title, and the audience needs to be told, hey, this is the level that they're at. Mm-hmm. Rather than, well, there's three guys that we think are, like, good enough. That's all I'll say. But, yes, let's get back to AEW.
Yes, as I was saying, Brian, man.
Listen, the people have been waiting for this conversation. We're just going to – come on. We're gonna give them everything they've been missing.
Make sure they get their money's worth.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, let's end on a positive note. AEW's got a big show coming up this weekend. The listeners, they're either listening to this Friday night in lieu of SmackDown or Saturday morning, the morning of the big show Full Gear coming from Baltimore. So any thoughts on the pay-per-view? What are you most looking forward to, and how do you think the show is going to turn out?
I mean, so this whole Cody stip on the Scarecrow match is very interesting. I could see it going one of two ways where...
I want to hear this because I've got a theory of my own.
I mean, I think if he loses and doesn't win the title, I do think they're going to stick to it. And I think that is honestly a very clever way to say this guy is one of our top baby faces, and we need to create a reason why he isn't always going after the title.
Right.
And I think it's also an interesting – because the other thing you can say about AEW, I think they allow characters to have interesting wrinkles and to have faults. Like they allow their top guys to lose. They allow their top guys to have shades of gray. Very interesting things you can play with from a character basis. Jon Moxley is a little hot-headed. Like a lot of times people get in their own way, which is good character building and storytelling, I would say. So I think with Cody, it could just be that he allows his pride to get to himself a little too much and creates this stipulation. And then you can create something way down the line, a year from now, where the fans, like you could even do like an online petition. Hey, go online, sign this petition. If we get 200,000 people signing this petition, Cody will be convinced that the fans want to see this, and he will change his mind, you know? Because didn't Dusty used to do that stuff where it's like, hey, write letters, send them to WCW, call this number. Like, you could do that. You could absolutely do some sort of social campaign to convince him to challenge for the title again, 6 months to a year down the line. Or what could be an interesting swerve is that they've been teasing a lot of people turning on Cody. And you could do a very interesting thing where Cody's the one who turns.
Oh,
and that there's a reason why MJF has been standing by his side this whole time. It's not that MJF is going to turn on him. It's that MJF is going to help him turn. And we were also kind of establishing that Brandy is going to be a heel as well. So, like, I don't know if there's any way you try to do a thing where, like, you try to do a double turn and suddenly, like, the inner circle are all baby faces, which I could see. Like, I could see everyone in that group, being received as a baby face, potentially. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting things. Another thing I had at one point, just in terms of, like, throwing out a random idea, was you do a thing where, In the Santana Ortiz and Young Bucks match, Adam Page comes out to save the Young Bucks. Like maybe there's some shenanigans, like maybe he runs off Hager or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then in the Page versus Pac match, the Elite doesn't have his back, which allows Pac to cheat in some way. And so he's pissed where it's like, I was there for you guys. I took my eye off the ball. So I was, you know, not at 100% when I went into my match with Pac, and then he takes it out on Cody in the main event.
Yeah, I love that you teed that up, because that's my theory. Because I do
and
think
that makes sense. Yeah.
I think Cody's going to lose, but and I know the logical explanation would be MJF, but I think it's going to be Paige.
Yeah.
That is the because A, it's something the fans aren't expecting, and B, it freshens up the Hangman Page character.
I would also like Page turns,
and it also keeps the it keeps the MJF turn on the back burner in your back pocket that you can pull that out whenever you need it.
I also, this might sound weird, Page and MJF is a team together.
Ooh,
that I wouldn't mind that either. If it's a thing where it's like MJF is like, nah, I decided to go with the winner here. Mm. And this guy's a winner. And I'm not saying Adam Page would need to go full JBL in that scenario, but you know, a little change of the gimmick, so he's not just the horseman.
Yeah, I think like the I love the fact that they threw that stip in because you could go a number of different ways with it, and I think any way you go with it, they're smart enough to tell the story that they're trying to tell. And I was talking with somebody last night about it, and maybe I'm being too much of a prisoner of the moment, Brian, man, yeah. But I think Cody Rhodes is smart enough with this stuff. We saw it in a Nick Aldis feud. We saw it with the Dustin Rhodes feud. I think Cody is smart enough to know his limitations in the ring, but he also knows he can overcompensate for that with the story. And I think he's smart enough to plan ahead and tell a story that is going to take the viewers on a journey.
Yes, I mean, because that's – I mean, he is, you know, he's Dusty's kid. And Dusty, you know, said, you know, we're making movies. Dusty was always about giving people – and sometimes a little too convoluted, a little too twisty. He always wanted to give people stories. And curveballs are good. Setbacks to characters are good. Mm-hmm. And I think giving Cody this big obstacle and then also making it a thing – and I don't think AEW is going to do this – where they're just going to suddenly tomorrow say – yeah, fuck it. We're just going to give him a title shot. they're not going to do that because Cody, again, he has the power and the sway, to make sure that they hold up his stipulation, that they don't hurt his character like that. And that's the other thing. It ties slightly back to what we were just talking about is that the strongest advocate for all of these guys are going to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And in WWE, that power is completely taken away. Your job is to do what they tell you to do. And in fact, if you're the kind of guy that bucks that, you're not going to get in that position. You don't get into the Seth Rollins position if you ruffle feathers. You're going to get tagged with like, oh, this guy's difficult. He's tough to work with. We can't trust him, sort of thing. So yeah, I think going over to AEW, I don't know. But the thing is right now, I trust their booking. And whenever I see people... I guess here's the thing is that I don't try to just be negative. And I know that when I start talking about WWE, I get very negative. But when it comes to AEW, I'm not trying to put my cynical wrestling fan hat on yet. This company hasn't done anything to lose my trust. So far, everything they've done has really paid off. So if something doesn't make sense or if I think this other thing, like, no, just let it play. Like one of the things I kept seeing on Twitter after the most recent show was people complaining about how like wild that closing segment was. It's like, no, that's a great go home segment. Like that gave me a reason to want to see all of those matches. And I mean, like two people in my mentions, like one was first like, yeah, but why are the Bucks out there? Like that made no sense. Like you're just because they own their vice presidents. They got to get their shine in the main event. So I was like, no, their opponents were out there. Their opponents for the pay-per-view were out there because they're part of the inner circle. Like
exactly.
It all makes sense. This all plays into something. You know, I'm sure that eventually we're going to get some sort of match between Dustin Rhodes and Jake Hager. Like that's all still coming.
Yeah, and it's all leading to, as Cody said in his promo, the Elite versus the Inner Circle sometime down the line.
Exactly. So when I look at all that and I kind of see what they've set in motion, it would make very little sense to turn Cody. So I don't necessarily think they're going to do that because you still have this dangling threat of Dustin and whatnot. But him losing and then having to overcome that obstacle, yeah. I think is really interesting. In fact, you could even do a thing where, honestly, I think Cody setting up the stipulation and then down the road turning and going against his word, I think would be worthwhile to fans.
Yeah, there is something to be said for down the line, you know, a year or so, maybe 2 years, however long this company is in business for, like there's a gold mine in terms of a heel run for Cody where he becomes the person he hated in terms of Triple H.
Yeah.
Where the power gets to him and he starts to abuse it.
And I think when it comes to a televised wrestling show, the biggest strength that your title has is that it's a prop that bestows importance upon mm-hmm. people and can be used to elevate somebody. I mentioned that thing about The Rock, how seldomly he held the title. Steve Austin held it even less. If this was a, you know, we're doing a show at the Garden every month, so we need to have the one big champion that people come to see, that's not the business anymore. And, you know, the belt being on Cody, the belt not being on Cody, that really doesn't matter. As long as he is still a strong character in that top mix who's having interesting feuds and is still performing at the level he's performing, it doesn't matter if he has the belt or not.
One more thing about the kind of the background, the front office inner workings of AEW, because I've had some people talk to me this week about the price points of these shows.
Yeah.
In a world where we now have the WWE Network, which, in my opinion, drastically underpriced themselves from the jump. Do you think that the market is going to be sustainable for AEW for these four shows a year, or however many shows they do a year, to charge the $50 a pop?
It will be interest, because I don't know. And I think with Full Gear, like I was personally surprised to know that it had the $50 price point. I think because it is a brand new show, I think that hurts. Like it isn't the All Out, you know, it isn't Double or Nothing. It isn't an established thing that they've already done one of these before.
Yeah.
I maybe would have set it a little bit lower. But hey, they're figuring out what their business model is. And if it's, hey, yeah, if we charge 30, then we sell 75,000 pay-per-views. If we charge, you know, if we charge 50, then we sell 50,000. So we end up making more money.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's just like, it's figuring out, okay, what's that breaking point?
That's the other thing too. Like the money to be made is there right now on the table. So
right.
I don't like they're not in a position to turn away money right now.
It's like when Pacquiao and Mayweather had their fight and wasn't it like $100.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, if you had charged 50 instead of 100, would twice as many people have bought it? And probably not. Like, would the number have been higher? Yes, but not that much higher. And I think it's a very similar case with AEW. I think they're probably finding out what that price point is. 50 is kind of steep, you know, but I think we'll see. I really don't know. I think that Double or Nothing was able to charge that because there was so much interest with it being the new show. I think All Out was able to charge that because, again, this was a need that still wasn't being met. I think when you're at a point where AEW is on television every week, I think people feel less inclined that they have to purchase it. But really, it's the Wild West. And when it comes to AEW, they're on a pretty good track record. You know, like whenever people want to underestimate them, they kind of prove people wrong. So, you know, until we actually get the information and the numbers, like, you know, who knows? You know, my thing is with AEW, as much as people want to like maybe just compare the raw numbers to WWE or second guess their business model. This business is being run by very smart people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the smartest people who ever run a wrestling company, if we're just being honest. So I don't
listen, bro.
I don't see them just doing things wrong for the sake of it.
Is not a Bob and Dixie Carter situation.
Right. TNA, which was, now we can look at it with hindsight, it was a make-work program for their daughter. Like, they wanted to keep her busy, and they were willing to lose $20 million a year on a wrestling company to do so, because they were billionaires. It was just a hobby for their kid. Yeah. And then you look at AEW, and I don't think it's going to be that. I don't think it's going to be like, oh, yeah, we just put on these $50 pay-per-views no one buys. TNA put on monthly pay-per-views that were never bought by more than like 20,000 people ever in their entire history. Usually it was around 7. I don't think AEW is going to be doing that. And if I'm not mistaken, they've said this is their last pay-per-view of the year, right?
Yeah, there won't be another one until 2020. Or yeah, 2020.
It'll be interesting to see if they do. Because don't they still have a deal, though, with BR Live where they're still going to be doing some like specials on there that are free, right? If I'm not mistaken, like because they did those two over the summer.
Yeah. And Fighter Fest and Fight for the Fallen.
Exactly. And I wonder, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like when they announced their TV deal that like that was part of the package as well, where it's like there's going to be like three of these.
Okay.
Because for Turner, it isn't just bringing eyeballs to TNT. It's also getting people to sign up for this BR Live service. So that's the thing. I had falsely assumed that Full Gear was going to be that, and it's not. But maybe we'll get, I mean, who knows? Like maybe, you know, like they'll announce a little down the line. It's like, oh, hey, there's going to be this big New Year's Eve special that will be on BR Live. Who knows? But yeah, I've gone on for a very long time to say, I think they're smart people. And I think if that's the price point that they're at, if it doesn't work, I think they'll learn from that. But I think all the data that they've seen so far, that's probably where they're going to do the best business.
Yeah. And this is a company that has shown in its short time frame and its short lifespan that it can course correct, that it can pivot, as we said earlier. So I'm looking forward to the show on Saturday. I think it'll be worth the $50. I don't know how long these shows will be worth $50 just due to the, you know, economy of the world and the way we consume entertainment nowadays. But yeah, I don't think that they are going to tick off any fans in the moment right now with the $50 price tag.
Well, and also they're in a fight. And I think they understand that they're still establishing themselves. They can't coast yet, and I don't think they have any interest in coasting. So if it doesn't work, they will pivot. But they're also in the business of delivering and of making fans. And so they've made it very clear that if you spend $50, if you spend your money – we will give you a good show, and we will live up to the things that we advertise, and we will live up to the stipulations. And that's why I firmly believe if Cody says, I will not challenge for the title again, he will not challenge for that title for at least 6 months to a year. And when he does, they will...
It'll be a big deal.
It'll be a big deal. You can either keep him babyface and do this social media petition, or you could do a thing where he goes against his word and turns heel. Because for whatever reason, whatever gets him to that point.
Maybe or he pulls a Maze Gilliam and just harasses his opponent into meeting him. I thought I told you that we won't stop.
Well, I would love the thing if Paige is the guy who costs him, and then Paige is like his fucking sworn rival. Yeah. Like we used to kind of have that in wrestling, but we really don't right now. Like how many guys in WWE have like a sworn fucking rival? Like, never, ever will me and that guy ever be on the same page. And Impact kind of maybe had it for a little bit with, like, with Rude and Storm.
Yeah, yep, that's exactly that. The example I was going to go to. Like, anytime they were in a ring, it meant something.
Right, and it's like, that was a blood rivalry. And I feel like you could maybe do that with Paige and Cody. And maybe you get to a point where a year and a half, who knows when, Paige wins that title. And Cody's like, I cannot fucking stand that. Yeah. I cannot see that guy with that belt. But I made this promise. I don't want to disrespect all these fans. And then you do whatever the social media thing is. You have people sign a petition. And he goes, okay, the fans want to see me do it. Paige, I'm coming after you. And I'm coming for that belt. Like, you can make it a big deal down the line.
Oh, Brian, man, let me tell you something, Brian.
What?
Cody Rhodes may have gone from undesirable to undeniable. but this week, my friend, you've gone from untraceable to unreplaceable. And I know that's not a word, but it has to fit the scheme of the promo. So,
very true.
But yeah, I'm glad we were able to reconnect. And I'm glad we were able to talk about something that gives you joy something like Vince Russo that gives you headaches.
But even that was like kind of fun to talk about. I know we've gone a long time. It's because I've had to purge every pro wrestling opinion I've had since we last spoke. But no, honestly, like this is, if we're going to end on like just one big blanket thing, This is a very interesting time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Certainly, and it's going to be consistently interesting. This isn't like, hey, CM Punk cut a good promo and 3 weeks later they fucked it up. This is a very interesting time.
Isn't the Nexus is what you're saying.
No. And I'm also curious to see where this goes, because we are in a war. We're in a war here between these two companies, and I think we're also going to start seeing we're in a war between the fans. Like, can you imagine if there had been social media in the late 90s and what people were saying about Goldberg versus Austin and all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
We are there. We are in a war. It's a very interesting time to be a fan. And honestly, as much as I rag WWE, I want the best for all of these companies. Even when you and I were shitting on Impact every single week, I wanted that company to turn around.
Yep.
And it's a shame that they're not the size they once were, but I'm glad they're at least a somewhat competent operation now that can employ some people and give and like, you know, honestly, would Tessa Blanchard be having the career she's having right now without Impact?
Nope. Probably and LAX, would LAX be where they are now with AEW if not for that time and Impact?
Exactly. But I would say Tessa in particular, where she is being pushed in a way that even WWE isn't pushing their women. And no other company was willing to push a female star like that. Maybe Lucha Underground a little bit, but that wasn't, you know. I want there to be as many thriving, popular avenues for people to work in. And as much as I could, like, you know, I've ragged on Seth Rollins. I would love for Seth Rollins to, because I think Seth Rollins has something in him. I mean, I think Hunter is probably the closest comparison for him. And I do think he could get there. I think if you just allowed Seth to actually talk as himself and kind of be the prick that he is, and that's not a bad thing. Like, that's a good thing. Like, Hunter being a prick is what got him over. It's what got him, like, made be a heel. You let him go out there, just crank it up a little bit. But, you know, until then, you know, I just don't want us to get to a point where we just have a roster of Shorty G's.
Brian, you don't know how much Shorty G has had to overcome in his life to get to where he is today.
Yeah, he had to overcome being an Olympian. That's whatever. That's its whole other. I don't know if I can go this far, because I'm not going to say, you know, Gable is better than Kurt Angle.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't go
I'm
that
not
far
go there. But you know what? He's better than Dean Malenko.
Yeah,
he's better than Dean Malenko, and he's a pretty good, pretty level comparison right there. I'm just saying, if you go through and you connect everyone now with who their logical avatar from the past was, almost every single one of them is better than that person was.
Yeah, as it should be. Like, NBA players are better than they were in the 80s or the 60s.
Exactly.
Football players are bigger, stronger, faster than they've ever been. Baseball players are better. And so it would only make sense that this simulated sport would have better athletes and better performers than they did 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Right. It's strictly the creative and the presentation that hasn't evolved. And I'm so happy that we have AEW, which I'd be happy if it was just shaking things up. Like, if it was shaking things up, but I wasn't a fan of what they were doing, like, I'd be like, okay. Yeah. But the fact that it is, and I'll be honest, like, I am now actually interested and invested in professional wrestling in a way I haven't since I was a kid, if I'm just going to be totally honest. Like, I look forward to AEW. Like, my girlfriend and I have just kind of had to have the talk of just like, you know what? Wednesdays are just off limits now. There's off limits. Like, in the past, it would be like Monday nights, like, we could do something else, and maybe I'd look at Twitter twice to see if anything happened. But now it's like, you know what? Wednesdays, sorry. Like, we're both doing our own things on Wednesdays now.
And I think what I'm going to do, Brian, I'm going to take a page out of your man Cody's book, and I'm going to make a promise to the people.
That I'm never coming back on this podcast?
If this show doesn't get more than 300 downloads, 300 streams, Brian Mann will never be back.
No, this was fun. I mean, it'd be great to, you know, just kind of, you know, keep staying in touch and whatnot. It's, I don't know, just like, it's an interesting time. It's an interesting time to be a fan. And it does feel good to have a show that I look forward to, and that I trust the people making it, and I have a good time watching it. Like, there was that who was it? It was Riho. I forget. I feel so bad that I'm blanking on the women's names right now. They had a women's match a couple weeks ago. It was the same episode that had Cody the Tony interview, like in the car.
You're talking about Shanna.
Yes, that interview or that match. I didn't know who either of those people were when the match started.
Yeah,
and I don't think the audience did either. But the audience was fully into it by the end, and I was like, hey, I had a great time watching that.
Yep.
So that's the thing. Like,
she's a wrestler that's been around for a while, just kind of under the radar. And, yeah, I'm glad people like that are getting work.
Yep. And here's the thing. I know you're wanting to write. I had one last big topic I wanted us to talk about.
go ahead, Brian. I don't know when the next time we'll talk is. Okay. Let's go ahead and throw it out there for the people.
So, and I will put a very, because we could go on for like 2 more hours about this, but I'm just going to put a quick cap on it. So there has been discussion about how the upper card talent in AEW all have something in common, and that is that they are all white. There's not diversity at the top of the card, which I hear and I certainly respect. My main response, and I really want to know how you feel about this. My main response is that I just look around the independent industry and I don't know who those guys are that you signed to be in those spots. WWE, to their credit, has made diversity a very major priority over the last couple of years. And they have signed up, you know, almost any minority performer who has any sort of name, they have signed. And guys that they would not have in different eras. So I look around the industry and I'm like, yeah, if Keith Lee was available, he'd be in that top mix. If Shane Strickland were available, I think he'd be in that top mix. Like I see
ACH, Leo Rush.
And also so many of these guys that WWE has signed, and they're just sitting in an apartment in Orlando and going to the gym. Like, they're not using them. And
they're just stockpiling talent.
Exactly. And so that's why for me, and I actually had this conversation with Damien, with our buddy Damien, and the name he brought up was Fred Yehi, who I agree. But when you look at the number of like talented performers of color who could be in that top mix, most of them are signed to someone.
Yeah.
And I do think that they can get there eventually with Scorpio Sky. But I like, and I don't want to like downplay anyone who like, that's a concern of theirs. And I think it's a valid concern. But I also think because AEW is actually making stars, they don't just simply snap their fingers and say, this person's a main eventer. And I think that for some of those people, they kind of have to, you know, work up. But I definitely want to know your thoughts on it.
I think it's certainly something to be cognizant of, something to be aware about of. And I think the fact that this is a company, like you said, in regards to their booking, haven't given you a reason to doubt them yet. I think the fact that you got a woman of color as one of their executives, granted she's married to one of their other executives, but nonetheless, like, that's a big deal in wrestling.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the power is held by a lot of people that look exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the company is not a white guy.
Exactly. Yeah, Tony Khan. And so I think that there are talents that, unfortunately, due to contract situations, like you said, you know, ACH or Shane Strickland or Leo Rush or Willie Mack and Rich Swann in Impact aren't available.
Jeff Cobb and ROH.
Yep. Jeff Cobb, Jay Lethal, Kenny King, who I love from the BDC days. Hell, somebody like an MVP, like an older guy. But I think they are aware enough that will not be an issue down the line. Like you said, they're building up guys. And the fact that we've got a tag title match on Saturday where only one of the 6 men involved in a 3-way is a white dude.
Yeah, I didn't even thought about that.
I think that's a big deal because you got the Lucha Brothers, Private Party, and then Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kay. I think that's a good deal. I think the fact that your first women's champion was a Japanese woman, like that's a big deal.
And it's her and Nyla Rose, who is, you know,
yep,
and that was your first title match performer on, you know, on any of these promotions on television.
Yep. And the fact that, like, I mentioned his name earlier, but I think one of their bigger stars, a diamond in the rough, if you will, Brian Mann, who might get some negative, stupid, idiotic comments coming from social media when they first debut him. But in the long run, I think he's going to be a star. It's Sonny Kiss.
Yeah, and I don't think he will get the kind of pushback that I think people are expecting. I think he is such a fun, flamboyant character, and it's so easy to buy into him.
Like Chris said on the NWA podcast, he's flamboyant, but everything that Sonny Kiss does feels genuine. It doesn't feel like they told him to, quote unquote, go out there and be gay.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he'll be, and he's a lovable character too. So I think he'll be fine. But
only Jim Cornette could hate Sonny Kiss.
he's doing a gimmick. I just wanted to, you know, touch, and we touched on it very briefly, but it was something that I've seen a lot of people talk about. I purposely hadn't mentioned anything on Twitter because I felt like it was something that deserved a little bit, not just me, the white guy, saying, here's how it goes. But also, like, I do feel like it was something that deserved to actually be talked about and not just here's a couple sentences on it.
Brian's like, I need to take this concern to a Nubian wrestling advocate, if you will. Exactly. Our Nubian eyes watching me.
Hey, our Nubian eyes watching AEW. That's what they need to be concerned about.
That's a good question.
I don't know what the racial breakdown is on the show. But yeah, I think we're on the same page there, where it is something that I would love to see them change. Looking at their top mix of guys, they still none of their guys in their top mix are AEW made guys yet.
Yeah.
They brought people in from outside. And right now, there's not that guy available on the outside, as far as I'm aware. I've seen a couple people in PWG. It'd be great if they, you know, signed some people, and you could kind of be like, okay, I could see where this talent could, you know, advance up into this other thing. But, you know, that certainly is something I would like to see. But when I just look at it, and I'm like, I don't see any main event just ready guys.
And we're still talking about a company that is within its first year.
Yes.
So, like, they've got time to grow. So, my standards for them are a lot less high than for a company like the WWE, which has 50 years of experience and a track record.
Oh, and at least a half dozen guys who I'll say there's at least a dozen black male performers under their employment right now who could be in the top mix.
Mm, yep.
Like,
oh, only to be squashed in 7 seconds by Brock Lesnar.
Exactly. maybe that's the thing. Maybe the goal is you need to get Keith Lee up there because Keith Lee is too big to F5. Like, that's the only way to end Brock Lesnar's run is just get a guy who just physically cannot be F5'd.
I don't know what to do with this guy, Vince.
I quit. I'm gone. But yeah, this was a great chat. It's good to catch up.
So before we F5 you out of here, Brian, man, where where can the people find you and find out about the good work you're doing and hear about you gushing over All Elite Wrestling on social media?
Yeah, at Brian Max Man on Twitter, and yeah, I mean, I don't know, like I'm just wanting us to all watch wrestling and have fun now. I mean, I think we legitimately have a good company. Mm-hmm. And listen, if they fuck it up, like I will call them out because I will be upset by it.
I can't wait for those post Dynamite tweets 3 years from now where Brian is destroying the AEW booking and telling them how they could have done it better.
I mean, yeah, keep it 2020 is going to happen eventually.
Of course, you can find me at @ MOZAIK at Nate Mosaic. You're probably listening either on the Kings of Sport free feed or the Patreon feed. So you know about all that. Patreon.com/Kings of Sport. Where you can check out video versions of the podcast. You can check out the 20 Twin Twin, which is a political podcast, as well as any new episodes of the Nubian Wrestling Advocates, the aforementioned new show featuring me and Chris from LA. So yeah, that's going to do it this week, Brian, man.
Definitely. This was fun. We'll do it again down the road and review America not coming back.
Well, enjoy full gear. And as we are wont to do on these shows, Brian, I have to leave the people with a good word.
Have at it. Or am I doing it?
I was going to ask you to do it because our roles have been reversed. I was going to put you on the spot, but I'm not going to do that to you, Brian. I've got a prepared statement for the people.
Okay.
In this time of great fanfare for wrestling fans everywhere, just enjoy the moment and listen to the words of Tayo Cruz and take that with you on your week. Don't snicker at the greatness of Tayo Cruz, because we're going to rock this club. We're going to go all night. We're going to light it up like it's dynamite. Now, I told you once, and I told you twice, we're going to light it up like it's dynamite.
Wide, wide world of sports is going on here.
Leave it all on the mat, because that's what I do when I get it done so I can do it. Yeah!
I'm on a new level.